The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good morning again. What a joy. So the topic for the week, we will continue with the Buddha's teachings on social and communal harmony. Just pausing and feeling so refreshed from the metta practice. Yesterday we talked about right view as the forerunner of harmony, mostly in terms of what Gill might call conventional right view, or Bhikkhu Bodhi translates as mundane right view. Two aspects: one, that our actions are consequential, and the second is that we can discern what's beneficial, what's helpful, what's unhelpful. The trajectory for the week, mostly, we're moving from the personal practice to the social. Though, of course, on inspection, it's pretty difficult to isolate these two. Today, we will extend this practice of right view, and we'll bring it into clear practical terms for the purposes of cultivating communal harmony. So the theme specifically for today is that for right view to transform us and our communities, it takes our effort. It takes our effort. I'd like to introduce this by pointing out, it said that Nibbana, the final goal of this practice, is the destruction of greed, hatred, and delusion. And just to point out, the highest goal in this sense, defined in terms of its social implications, the manifesting of a life freed of greed, hatred, and delusion. So I'd like to look at the social aspect of the Buddha's teaching through his teachings as a father, actually. There are a handful of suttas where he teaches his son, Rahula. Rahula was known for, later in his life, of course, being known as the Buddha's foremost disciple of those desirous of the training. He really wanted to practice. So I asked the question, is desire enough? Is desire enough? Bhikkhu Bodhi points out in this book, Social and Communal Harmony, he says the process of personal transformation does not occur automatically. For right view to exercise a positive influence, personal effort is required. He goes on, a deliberate endeavor to harmonize our conduct with our understanding and intentions. A deliberate endeavor to harmonize our conduct with our understanding and intentions. So I'd like to pull out some of these themes and look at them in terms of one of these teachings of the Buddha to Rahula, one of my favorite sutta stories. It's called The Buddha's Advice to Rahula at Mango Stone. Now, the setup is that Rahula is very young. He's supposed to be maybe 7 years old. He joined the Buddhist order very, very young. And of course, we know that he's going to be known as the disciple that is foremost desirous of training. So maybe it meant all the more that his father, the Buddha, admonished him this morning in the sutta about the importance of never telling a deliberate lie. He has this beautiful image of throwing away the water in a water dipper, and says that if we're willing to tell a deliberate lie, there's no evil we wouldn't do, and we're throwing away our life in the training. So that's the setup before he says, what do you think, Rahula? What is the purpose of a mirror? What's the purpose of a mirror? And being an astute young one, Rahula says, for the purpose of reflection. The Buddha says, ah, so too, Rahula, an action with the body should be done after repeated reflection. An action of speech should be done after repeated reflection. And an action by the mind should be done after repeated reflection. And then the reflection that he explains to Rahula, he repeats 9 times. There are 9 variations on this. So I'm going to read this whole paragraph because I think it's that important. The teaching goes like this. Rahula, when you wish to do an action with the body, you should reflect upon it. Would this action I want to do lead to my own affliction, or to the affliction of others, or to the affliction of both? Is it an unwholesome bodily action with painful consequences, painful results? When you reflect, if you know, this action that I wish to do with the body would lead to my own affliction or to the affliction of others or to the affliction of both. It's an unwholesome bodily action with painful consequences, painful results. Then you definitely should not do it. But when you reflect, if you know this action that I wish to do with the body would not lead to my own affliction or the affliction of others or the affliction of both. It's a wholesome bodily action with pleasant consequences and pleasant results. Then you may do that action with the body. So he's teaching the Buddha here is teaching a 7-year-old a basic reference point by which he can begin to train himself in the ethical life, by which he can take his understanding of the consequential nature of action to develop his discernment about what's harmful and what's helpful in his actual life. He's training Rahula in right view. What's interesting about this to me, first of all, is that it's not a complicated philosophy about causality. It's something observable here and now. Observing harm, observing not harm. Something that would be evident to a 7-year-old child and is a sound basis for our own development. Of course, the Buddha goes on to encourage and admonish Rahula to reflect in this way before any action, during any action, and after any action. More or less saying, Rahula, every action that you do, analyze it in these terms. And if you find at any point in the process, oh, I'm going to harm someone, stop. Don't do this. And if you reflect, and to the best you understand, this action will not generate harm, unbeneficial actions, affliction for myself or for others, or for both, then go ahead. Every action, I hear this and my eyes get big. It's a lot of reflecting to do. We act a lot during the day and at night, perhaps. Maybe it's that the monastic life is one of relative simplicity. Maybe. So there's extra time for such circumspection. But still, we can aspire. I take Bhikkhu Bodhi's point here that it takes our effort to infuse our conduct with right view. And maybe it's not every action, but what we can muster. A second thing I want to bring up is that this observation of the world that we live in, the life that we live, how often do we have to act on partial information? Where we really don't know if we're going to cause harm or benefit. The layers of causality are so complex. The request of this particular practice, I think, normalizes the fact that we can't always know for sure. But we can reflect as best we can with the information that we have. And if to the best of our discernment, it looks like this action that I'm about to do will cause benefit rather than harm, then I go ahead. And then while I'm doing it, I still have time to reflect. And then after, yet again. And I think the recognizing that the part of the invitation is reflecting after the action, it recognizes that we don't always have the information at the beginning. And it also recognizes that sometimes we'll be wrong. Sometimes we do harm. So there's a significant variation in these instructions to Rahula for after you've done an action. And the instruction is, if you find upon reflection after acting that you have done harm, you have caused affliction for yourself, for someone else, for both, then the ask is that you, quote, lay it open. You confess it. You tell a good Dharma friend. You let them know, which I think in our more modern language, it undermines shame. It undermines the closing off and the hiding of something that we've done, if that's available to us and healthy right now. So we lay it open. And the second part is we resolve to restrain ourselves in the future, to do something different, to try something else. We continue with this experiment of making right view real through our conduct. And after an action, impartial as our information might be, if we find that we've actually done something wholesome, something beneficial for ourselves and for each other, then I love this. It says, you can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome qualities. We can celebrate our goodness, celebrate when it's gone well. And in this way, in a very, very basic way, training ourselves, learning over time, this action leads to harm in these circumstances. This leads to goodness. Let's go toward goodness. So you can hear already how our personal training in right view and conduct and this form of repeated reflection, of course, it's done through our restraint. It's done through cultivation. It benefits us and it benefits others. Just a couple of quick examples. First is, I'm going to be going on a family vacation sometime soon. I'm going to go see my family. I'm going to stay with my sister for a little while. It might occur to me while I'm there to cook my sister a meal. May occur to me. This arises in my mind. I reflect upon it. Is this an action that will cause benefit, cause harm, affliction, or help? Or can it be done in such a way that it leads into the wholesome? And it's pretty easy to see that internally, I'm doing something beneficial. I'm practicing generosity, relinquishing of attachment and stinginess. And it also comes along with this inner wholesome feeling. And then after I give the gift, I might imagine, I reflect in the future, that I see the happiness that it causes her. I can see her being nourished. Say she had a hard week and, I really didn't want to cook today. Oh, this wonderful thing. My brother's cooked me a meal. And then the joy multiplies. On the other hand, you can take an example of something that maybe we see as unhelpful. To borrow an example from Gill, say I slander a friend. And immediately when I do it, say I was just absent-minded, but immediately when I do it, I feel an inner ouch. But also that friend might find out and end the friendship. I think upon reflection, if I had had the presence of mind to look ahead, I would have known this will cause affliction, this will cause hurt, this will cause harm. Don't do this. Because it only occurred to me after the fact, I reflect back, I see this is an action that caused harm. I'm going to confess this to a good friend, and I'm going to resolve for the sake of my practice, my inner life, my social life, my friendships, the care that I have for these people, I'm going to resolve to not do this in the future. So these are two simple examples that maybe show something about how this practice of repeated reflection makes real our right view. And as I said, the process of this mental training this inner training, it does bring about a sort of inner wisdom, but it simultaneously conduces to social harmony. And to close, maybe we can just think about the social ripple effect. If you can imagine yourself, 24 hours of action, this one person reflecting in this way, before, during, and after actions. How many interactions, large and small, ripple out in beneficial ways to create beneficial action, beneficial impact for the people in our lives and beyond? How much goodness is that? And then we can maybe extend that and say, half of us do that today, or all of us do that today. How much goodness does that bring into the world? So our effort, training in right view, making our right view real. Tomorrow we'll turn to another aspect of the teachings on social and communal harmony, dealing with anger. Hope to talk to you then. Please take care. May all beings benefit from our practice together.